What can you do? I went down to see Dr. Coolidge again. And I said, the policy and company, as I understand it, is to publish. And yes, he said. And John Wiley and Sons people came to see me and said they had your approval and the approval of the vice president in charge of engineering to come and see me and talk to me about this new development called silicones, and gave me permission to ask you to write a book about it. Yes, they write the book, so I wrote the book. Therefore, isn't it time that it went in? What right, by what authority is Marshall holding it up? Coolidge, who would never offend anybody, said, I'll talk to Abe about this. And next day, Marshall's secretary called and said, the book is ready here. So I sent it in. So, see, all sorts of aspects of personal jealousies and whatnot. How did this come up and why?
Well, we were talking about the 3 years between 45 oh, yes. and 48.
All right.
And so, I'm just checking here the book you're talking about.
An Introduction to the Chemistry of the Silicones. This is the first edition. There was a second edition, too.
Okay, yes. Okay.
That book, well, first, during the war years, there were very few people could talk about what they had done. I had published about methyl silicone and the water repellent business and the land patent I had. So the ACS people in headquarters asked me would I be willing to go around to local sections. They would make up a tour for me, take care of everything, all expenses and so on. See, Dr. Coolidge again, since eventually we'll need markets, customers for this. Is it all right to talk about it at ACS local section meetings? By all means, he said, if you're willing to take the time and endure the overnights and the Fuhrman cars and so on, go to it. So a whole series, a long series of talks all around the country. First the East, and then the South, and the Midwest, and then to the Pacific Coast, and the Northwest, and all over. And so when it came time to write the book, of course, it was easy to just consider the experience of those lectures and write it. So I was busy first informing, educating all the neophytes who came into the laboratory to work on the project. Second, collecting all the monthly reports, organizing them, writing abstract, indexing them, hand out copies to all the new people who came in. And third, of course, the lectures, and fourth, my own search, my own investigations. I had long strings of projects I wanted to carry out, but I had no retinue, there's no string of assistants. I did have Gillum, who switched over from the magnesium oxide work to work on silicones, William Farr Gilliam, known as Gillum. That's the way he pronounced it. Nice southern gentleman. So he investigated under my encouragement and direction. Hey, is copper unique in this? Are there other metals that will catalyze this reaction? Are there combinations of metals? If so, what are the metals? What are the yields? How much should we be patenting? Everything. The whole development of a zinc promoter came out of that work. So I was busy with that for a long while. But Meantime, the people at GE, Kingsley and others, had worked on this energy from nuclear fission. And at the end of the war, DuPont who had built and supervised and operated the big operation up there in Richland, Washington, for equipment, how do you operate the chain reaction to get the maximum yields of the U-235 and later plutonium, how do you separate these? The week after the final peace treaty was signed, they wanted out. They had already had the label of merchants of death smeared on them from the First World War, when they, of course, made gunpowder and other things. They wanted out right away. The federal authorities approached GE and said, see here, DuPont wants out of this. It's important, surely, to General Electric as a way of generating domestic electric power, and we want you to take it over. And GE people agreed to take it over. All right. Coolidge said, first thing we should do is establish a branch of the famous GE research laboratory out there. Who do we have to head such a thing? Went to Irving Patton out, chose him, sent him out there, gave him an office and a secretary, and said, now bring in all the people you need. This is going to be a branch of a GE laboratory, and our aim is to produce domestic electric power so cheaply that they won't even bother to meter it. It'll be like water in some communities. GE, of course, will manufacture the, well, first operate the piles, and they will sell central stations, generating equipment, and sell every electrical device imaginable, all based on nuclear power, and I will go to it. So Patno needed some help, and asked Marshall, and Marshall said, well, you need some inorganic chemists, and Coolidge said, yes, they need all the inorganic chemists we have out there. And all the inorganic chemists they had, I was the only one. So they rooted me out and sent me there. Childhood friend of Helen's is over at Fort Myers Beach, has come down from Indianapolis and is so anxious to see her and meet with her, and they have to make the arrangements. I'll leave that in Helen's hands. Yeah, so they pulled me out of the silicone project and sent me out there. If you're a good company man, you go where they send you, you do what they tell you.
Mention 473, please.
Well, it was new and exciting, but I hated to leave. I built a house there.
Hi, this is
Helen. Family and so on. So I went out to Richland, Washington, and Patton Road was already established there.
And how are you?
We studied together the separation process they used. And then Pat said, well, here, you get to work on this. There surely must be different and better ways to do this.
Yes.
Yeah, he had the Edison belief. There must be a better way, go find it. So I worked out there, went through separation process in the plant, moved into one of their barracks places, and after a while my wife came out and joined me. Drove across the country with Evelyn Patnaud, and great day when they arrived. We could then move into family quarters, Pat and I. Well, I followed the process as I did, stayed up all night, went through 30 hours straight following the procedures and the testing and the samples and the operating the counters to get the quantitative information and what to do with it and how do they... when do they add the carrier, precipitation with on the carrier, separation from the carrier, solvent extraction, and so on. Okay, but then came the final blow. The General Electric Company was then further requested by the federal government to drop all the domestic power project and work on nuclear propulsion for seagoing vessels. Impossible.
Well, we'll make it explosive.
As a Quaker and a longtime pacifist,
well, have you gotten in touch with the other
people? Well, I had been lucky because I was too young for the First World War and just slightly too old for the Second, although I was registered then. I thought we were through with all that, and here they wanted me to go into classified work and devote my time to the design and construction of destructive weapons of war. It had only one purpose, and that was to hurt people. I said, I won't do it. Well, if you're a good company man, you do as they tell you. I resolved then I needed more control over my life. I didn't want to be moved out there in the first place. I certainly wasn't going to work on that project, so I wrote some letters around to university people to see what might be available, and to cut all that short. I had three offers. One was from University of Southern California, where I was told they have the very best football team in the country.
Very good.
And wonderful sunshine and so on. And one was from the University of Indiana in Bloomington. Which is famous for its humanities and especially music and history and so on. To move out to the Midwest. And one from Harvard. So referred back to Cornell. Dennis, of course, had died, but his successor in the inorganic area was Albert Washington Laubengeier. I wrote to Lauby, and he said, well, there's no question about it. Even if they don't ever give you tenure at Harvard, it's a good place to have come from. And so I accepted that, and I was brought in there in order to take over Chemistry 1 from Arthur Lamb, who was due to retire in one more semester. So that's how I went there. So that covers all those 3 years and the events that happened and why I went there and when. Still had to uproot the family, take them out there. But the interesting upshot of all this, which you should get in your history, was that after I got established at Harvard and after I was given tenure, And I had been through a lot there. Dreadful days. I still can't go through that. My wife died of cancer. Older boy in children's hospital with polio. Went through living hell there. But there's where I put down my roots. All right, I'll get around to what I meant to tell you, and that was that years later, Guy Suits, by then vice president of GE and director of the laboratory at Schenectady, came to see me, and he said, "I realize now it was a dreadful mistake to take you off the silicone project. Everyone I meet in the country, all the officials, directors of research, tell me that, and I see it thoroughly. Won't you please come back under your own terms any way you want to do it?" I said, "Well, I put down my roots here. I like the academic life. I'm glad I'm back to it." "Well," he said, "we will make an arrangement with Union College so that you are a professor there and also a research associate at the GE laboratory, and you can do things the way you want there." I turned it down. I was glad I stayed at Harvard. Well, sorry about the outburst,
I understand.
Some things affect me deeply, and that's one of them. I never learned to be callous about. I should have.
No.
Well, so what's next on the...
I think we've covered everything very well. There's certainly much more of your career we could talk about, but I've already taken 4 hours of your time.
Well, get it all down in one trip. I believe in finishing things up.
I think what I would like to do is conclude by asking you the last question, and that is, and especially in view of what you've been telling me, what did it mean to win the Perkin Medal?
What did it mean? It gave me one tremendous lift at a time when I needed a lift. 1962. You see, I had just... just left GE and Harvard when the New York, New Jersey section of ACS awarded me the Baekeland Medal. I should show you the Baekeland Medal, a disc of gold that lay big and quarter inch thick. Honoring, it was given to someone every 3 years, someone who had discovered a new polymer, a new kind of polymer. That gave me a lift then, but say after the dark years, the Perkin Medal. Yeah, I had 2 small children. We prattled around with housekeepers and so on, and after I met Helen, we got married. That was just before the Perkin Medal dinner, and she went down to New York. We stayed at the
Plaza.
No, not the Plaza.
Waldorf?
The Waldorf Astoria, the legendary hotel. Well, it was just a revelation to both of us, of course. We had lived through Depression years. We never did things like that. So it was a wonderful occasion. It, of course, it gave me increased standing, but that wasn't important. It meant nothing, and I mean nothing, to the Harvard administration. They kept themselves separate from industry, and even my colleagues in the department there. That's all right. I thought it brought recognition. I had synthesized, developed a new kind of polymer, and this was way before the anything of the sort was given to any Dow Corning man. I felt good about the whole thing there, yes. It also, well, when graduate students learned about it, of course, the word got around. Incoming graduate students knew about this. It helped in my, what would you call it, my little squad of graduate students, research assistants, and Chemistry 1 helpers, and so on. But the most important thing was the tremendous lift it gave me of recognition, international recognition of the work. International recognition has meant a lot to me. Well, you look at all this.
Yes, I was looking at it before.
Honorary degree from Braunschweig. They have a laboratory named after me there. That was in 1966. This one is from Dresden, and that's 1992. See, it's still going
on.
These things have happened. I go to all the international meetings, not only the Gallo-Silicon Symposia, but the Organometallics conferences, the inorganic things. And, hey, last summer we even had a conference in Norway on Nordfjord on the west coast about the industrial uses of elementary silicon. And they invited me over there, and very interesting. Yeah, all the new uses. Chemical uses they're looking for. So, the international recognition has meant a lot to me. Gee, I've traveled a lot, Helen has enjoyed this. And she's my linguist. You ask her questions in Russian, in German, in French, in Spanish, she'll tell you. So, of course, I went over there. I had to learn to read German and French in graduate school. I didn't have any idea of how the language sounded. And my first sabbatical leave, we went to Austria because it was centrally located. I was offered a guest professorship at Innsbruck, and I looked at the map. Innsbruck was about equidistant from Rome, Berlin, and Paris, and you could get anywhere overnight from Innsbruck. And so I went there. I moved the whole family over. Helen not only raised those two children I had, but had a son of her own. He was 2 years old when we went abroad, and he still remembers a lot of that. And he's well, all three kids. I got a lot out of that year of living in Tyrol near Innsbruck. Mm. And we go back whenever we can. And of course, I guess this derives also from the Perkin Medal. I was known over there, invited to give talks, which I did in English. I had to has a fire, shelter and food and transportation for a family of five. You go in foreign country first time. They do this without knowing how to speak the language. I had to learn, so I got along in my bumbling way. So, all right. I don't know whether this provides a sufficient example, but why was I invited by Springer Verlag in Heidelberg to write a book? And